Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Tuesday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Lindsay White from Lexington, Kentucky, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for October 21st, episode 771. This episode is brought to you by High Visibility North America. Good morning, Horse World.
So we want you to think safe, ride safe, and be safe.
Wait a minute, 99. That gives me an idea.
You got a helmet? Oh, I've got a helmet. I got a beauty.
All right, let's roll. Hey, let's be careful out there.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on this Tuesday morning. Yes, that's a new opener because we have a new monthly show coming to you on the fourth Tuesday of every month, being joined here by Lindsay White of High Visibility North America. Good morning, Lindsay.
Good morning, Glenn. Good morning, Jennifer, as well.
Did you like that little opener that she put together for you this morning?
I did indeed.
She got helmets in it, right? I mean, I think they were talking about motorcycle helmets, but, you know, what the heck. There's not a lot of quotes from famous TV shows about helmets, riding helmets.
Hey, a helmet's a helmet. It's all about safety on this show, Glenn.
That's right. Hey, thank you so much for doing this. You're going to be with us now once a month, and it's part of our special monthly episodes that we're doing. We actually have one on Thursday about the Arabian horse that's going to happen every Thursday, the same week you're on. So that's kind of exciting, too. But today we're going to be talking all about safety. We do a show last week every month on emergency preparedness and things for your horse. And today, on this episode every month, we're really going to be talking more about the rider, aren't we?
That's right, we will be. I think we're going to have some quite exciting guests on, and I think it would be great to get the message of safety, not just about helmets, but all aspects of equestrian safety out to a wider audience. So I'm pretty excited about who we're going to have on the show in the next few weeks.
Very good. And today we have on the show coming up, we have a couple of guests. Jennifer, I know you were having some trouble this morning. Are you back with us?
I am, and I have on today's show.
Yay. Very good. Go ahead. Why don't you tell us?
On today's Safety Day with High Visibility North America, we will be talking about the results of, hey, watch this, anytime there's a horse involved, and what to do instead of whatever you wanted your buddies to watch you do that caused you to go to the hospital right before you went viral on YouTube. Helping us along this journey, this week we have FEI dressage rider Kim Gentry and eventer Colleen Rutledge. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Now, Colleen was in an accident a little bit ago, and we're going to have her on later in the show. And I haven't heard much from her, not as much as we've been hearing from, like, from some of the others. I'm glad she's agreed to come on and give us an update here.
I just think you're not in the right circles on Facebook, Glenn, because I've been reading about it on a daily basis.
Oh, have you? Okay.
That's right. You're just not in with the in crowd on there.
That's probably true. That is probably true. Well, Lindsay, let's do our daily winnies, and then we're going to find out a little bit more about you, because I have to think, and I've known you for so long, but there's some things I don't know. So this should be fun. Yeah. Well, my daily winnie goes out today to Amy Barrington, who I thought, being that we're doing a safety show today, We have talked about Amy quite a bit here on Horses in the Morning. She's the eventer that that got hurt here a while back. She was riding on September the 4th and was in an accident. She's in recovery in Atlanta at the Shepherd Center still, and her group is doing a good job at the Facebook page, Amy Barrington Recovery, of keeping us all informed. She's going through therapy of all different kinds and still improving. She still has some bad days and some good days, as you would expect with the kinds of severe injuries that she had, especially the head injury there. So she's still continuing to prove. They're hoping that, you know, in the next month or two that she'll be able to head home. And she apparently is getting her wit and her sense of humor back and snarkiness as well. So all of that is happening with Amy. You can follow her on her Facebook page.
And my day, Amy. I love that music. And my daily winnie today goes out to our dear friend, Courtney King Dye. As many of you will know, Courtney King was the inspiration for my founding Riders for Helmets, gosh, far too long ago now. And Courtney has announced very recently that she is actually expecting. So I think that is an amazing daily winnie today to tell everybody the wonderful news that Courtney is going to be having a future Olympian. Yeah,
that's great. Here, we'll give her this. Well, she has to be so excited about that.
I think she's very excited, and she shared a wonderful post on her blog, so you must all go and read about her news and how she kind of announced it to the world. But I'm just absolutely thrilled for her, and it couldn't happen to a nicer person. And, of course, for Jason, her husband, as well.
Maybe Jennifer could post that, you find that and post it on our Facebook page. Over at Horses in the Morning, you know, she, you know, I'm sure that 4 years ago she wasn't sure if she'd ever be able to have a family, and now look at her. That's so cool.
Yeah, it is very cool, and I think, you know, she had some trepidation when she kind of announced that her and Jason were going to try for a baby, but I think it's absolutely amazing that now she knows the great news. You know, she's kind of thrown caution to the wind and said, obviously, I'm just absolutely thrilled, and Jason's thrilled, and I just couldn't be more happy for it. It makes me very, very happy to hear that news.
Very good. Well, that's terrific. Well, let's talk a little bit about you and about what we're going to be doing here every month. But, you know, I got to thinking about it. I've known you now for, 4 or 5 years, and I didn't know anything about you pre-United States when you were over in England. You know, we've had dinner together. We've spent a lot of time together. And I don't know a whole lot about you in the previous life. So tell us a little bit about growing up in England. I don't even know if you rode over there.
I was going to tell you a very warped joke and say that was because I was in witness protection and you've blown my cover, Glenn. But that wouldn't be true. I kid.
So much for being on the radio.
Exactly. It's that very warped British sense of humor. No, but my background, I've been around horses since an early age. A good friend of my mum's mum actually put me on a horse at the age of 4, and I kind of never looked back after that. So my mother actually rode as well, funnily enough, and she broke several bones in her first 2 years of riding. So I grew up on a little Shetland pony and kind of graduated. Of course, you know, the classic Thelwell kid in England, and graduated from up the scale on the pony charts until I hit kind of the real deal on the horses, but somehow managed to gather several of them at one time, and my father was never kind of thrilled about that, because it not only meant more manure, but more bills for looking after them as well. But, you know, there were just some of them you just couldn't get rid of, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
So I've been around horses for many, many years.
Now, were you in Pony Club?
I was in Pony Club, yep. I was in the local Pony Club, and that was fun. I definitely remember the mounted games and the apple bobbing and various people dunking your whole head into the bucket if you weren't quick enough to retrieve the apple. Yep, so I went to local shows, did a bit of everything, really. Did some showing, did some jumping. Did a little bit of eventing. So my background is kind of quite varied, but I have to say, if I had a favorite discipline, I would have to lean towards eventing. there you go.
Well, that's, I think if you grew up a pony club in England, that you, you most of them leaned towards eventing. That's what they ended up doing.
That's right. Yeah, it is kind of the British thing to kind of, when you know, when you have such prestigious events such as badminton and Burley, and Burley's only gosh just over an hour and a half, you know, from where I grew up. So it's very difficult not to kind of gravitate towards eventing as your preferred discipline.
Now, do you still like eventing? You still like going to events and watching?
I do. Love going to Rolex. I mean, being here in Lexington, I'm obviously so spoiled because Rolex is right on my doorstep, so I love to watch cross country there. But sadly, over the last couple of years, I've actually been working on the Saturday, so I've had to watch it on the big screen. but you know, I do absolutely love it. There's nothing like the thrill of cross country. There really isn't. And when you go up and stand by those jumps, I mean, Colleen, we can talk about that a little bit today with her being our international event rider on the show, but it just is such an amazing thrill. And even as a spectator to watch, you know, I can't imagine jumping fences that size, but it's certainly fun to be a spectator.
Now, do you ride anymore? Do you still ride at all?
I do occasionally. Unfortunately, I was out of riding for a couple of years due to a car accident, but
right.
I do foresee kind of getting back that in the future, hopefully going forward, that would be great. I'd probably,
yeah.
At this point, I have to say, though, being a little bit older and wiser and not bouncing quite so much as you get to a certain age, you kind of think, maybe I'll just do show jumping because those fences fall down a bit easier.
You know, you could do what I did and just go all the way to driving because it's just, then you don't have to worry about it at all.
But still with the helmet.
Yeah, still with the helmet. Yeah,
yes,
I would
yes.
drive still with the helmet. We have seen people fall out of their carts. So that has happened. But, you know, you could get into driving and then you'd be fine. Just sit back there.
There you go. Sit back there. Maybe have two little Shetland ponies. Now that would be fun. Take me
That'd
back to my
perfect.
Room.
That'd be perfect. Hey, I got to tell you, we were at a driving show over the weekend, and the first class to come through was, what do they call them? Very small equines. They don't call them minis anymore. They're called very small equines. I guess that's a politically correct thing. So they have a VSE class, which is very small equines. You should have seen these minis doing the obstacles. I swear a couple of them were going to drown in the water obstacle. It was like up to their nose.
Oh, that's
it was
excellent.
So
that's, and I have to reminisce because obviously Jennifer was there as well. But do you remember when we were all down in Florida for the USDT fundraiser and we had Chester Webber, obviously very famous driver, with little ponies, and he was dressed, you know, David O'Connor was dressed as Sancho, and that was such good fun.
Yes, I forgot all about that. That's right. You know, and he's doing very well right now. I mean, he's like winning everything around the world. Chester
and he's
is.
Right in your back door now, isn't he? Just down, you're like practically neighbors with Chester Webber.
I pass Live Oak, his farm, every day we go to town, we pass his farm. He's about 3 miles from us.
Wow.
So
You're mixing with all the famous people down there, Glenn.
He hasn't invited me over for tea yet, so.
Well, maybe he will after he listens to this show. Maybe you'll get an invite now. You and Jennifer will be like best friends with him after this, because how could he not?
Oh, okay.
He looks bad after all.
Yeah. Now, let's fast forward in time a bit. We met you when you were working for Succeed probably about 5 years ago, and we got to know you because we lived not too far from each other in Lexington, Kentucky, and then we got to be friends after that. But how did, you know, a lot of people, it's been so long now, a lot of people probably have forgotten how Riders for Helmets came about, and why were you the one to do it?
I don't think I could answer the question of why I was the one to do it, because I still sometimes wonder why I was. No, I kid. But Riders for Helmets basically came about because of Courtney King Dye's accident. And obviously Courtney was a member of the 2008 Olympic team, and she had a traumatic brain injury, but gosh, back in 2010 now. And was very terribly hurt, obviously, and spent about a month in a coma and then has had a long road to recovery. But I knew Courtney through my old job and just wanted to do something, you know, when she had this accident. And I thought, gosh, if it can happen to an Olympian, it can happen to anybody. And I started to kind of look into the number of accidents of people not wearing helmets and was amazed. Obviously, because growing up in England, everybody wears a helmet for the most part. But over here, I was like, wow, you have all these Western disciplines, you have all these showing disciplines, lots and lots of different disciplines, even in dressage at that time, that did not wear a helmet. And so I kind of threw this website together called Riders for Helmets and never imagined at that time that it would grow as much as it has now at the current time. And gosh, you know, fast forward 3.5, coming up 4 years now, and it's quite phenomenal, the following it's got. I mean, we've got hundreds and hundreds of stories on the website. We get about 50,000 unique visitors a month, about 18,000 Facebook followers, and it really has become like a community for people to share their stories.
So when you were growing up and in the equestrian thing, you were doing pony club games and running and jumping and being crazy. Was being in pony club, safety does tend to come to the fore because that's part of the pony club thing. But as a whole, when you were growing up, was the idea of, yes, you will wear a helmet each time you ride, et cetera, was that very much at the forefront? Was it still a case of, oh, only kids and scared people wear helmets?
No, I mean, aside from, you know, dressage, I mean, I have to say that most people in England do wear a helmet. I mean, it's just kind of the norm that you would just get on a horse and really wear a helmet. Certainly, I think there's been obviously a lot of progress in terms of design of helmet. And I know some of the ones I wore back in the day, I believe they were certified, but they were still certainly the old kind of velvet style hunt cap, so to speak. But although they were classed as safety helmets. So I think there's been leaps and bounds in technology, but people did tend to really wear a helmet. There was only really kind of the dressage that didn't do so, because obviously we don't really have the Western disciplines over there, so there wasn't that influence of the cowboy hat. So I think for the most part, you know, as I recall, even adults, you know, you got on a horse, you wore a helmet.
Well, they were wearing in the hunt field, they were wearing the hunt caps way back. Now, they didn't really do much. But you had that look already of a helmet. And then, you know, geez, when Jennifer and I met, helmets were pretty much bowls on your head that maybe had a strap. You know, they just have come so far since those days.
They really have.
100
I
years
mean,
ago.
I was going to make a comment, but I won't. Glenn,
I was
we're
just
live
throwing
on
out
the air.
There, so you didn't have to.
And, of course, Jennifer would never give her age away. Because
No. She's much younger than
no.
I am.
No, I think it's amazing. I mean, the styles of helmet these days, you know, I will agree with you, even when I was growing up, they weren't particularly attractive. I mean, I kind of graduated very quickly to a skull cap style helmet, but they're just wonderful these days. I mean, it's all kind of bling, and there's all kind of colors and styles, and, you know, I don't think the excuse that helmets look ugly really can hold much water these days, because I just think they've just made so many different ones that appeal to so many different people that I just don't think you can really say that helmets are ugly, and that's not you know, why I'm not going to wear one. I just don't think that holds much credence anymore.
Well, and you really have, and I know you're very humble, so I'll do this for you. You really have, with Riders for Helmets and with some help along the way, but mostly you, with Riders for Helmets, made some inroads into getting changes done. I mean, when Riders for Helmets started, nobody in dressage was wearing a helmet. I mean, and now there are rules about wearing helmets in dressage. I mean, that I would have never thought in 4 years that much could have been accomplished.
Yeah, I mean, it's very kind of you to say, Glenn, as well. But as I always mention, there are two people who really deserve so much credit. And obviously one is Courtney King Dye, because I think that it was quite shocking that an Olympian, just when, you know, schooling a horse and wasn't competing, could have such a serious injury. And I think because so many people picked up on that, it went very, you know, viral, not just in the U.S., but certainly outside of the borders of the U.S. as well. And then, you know, the dear departed Dr. Craig Ferrell, former U.S. equestrian team physician and obviously former chair of the FEI Medical Council as well. And when he reached out to me, it really took the platform of Riders for Helmets to another level. And that was when we started to do the safety symposiums and bring some amazing people and speakers together for those safety symposiums. And really International Helmet Awareness Day as well. I mean, that started with 300 retailers in the US and expanded this year, can't believe it, to about, I think, 600 or 700 retailers in 8 countries. And I think one of my proudest moments as well, because I'd like to give, you know, credit where credit due also, is the FBI reaching out to me and actually kind of forming a partnership with Riders for Helmets, which certainly helped with that global expansion of the campaign as well. So, I'm just very humbled that so many people support the campaign, and I firmly believe we've been able to save some lives. I really, really do, based on the emails we received, and it's a vast number of emails every month now.
I know the International Helmet Awareness Day, there's a sale on helmets that day, and I know from some of the retailers, they sell more helmets in that day than they do the rest of the year, some of them, in one day. So it really is getting, you know, it really is, it's got the awareness to the point where people are acting, and that's always something, you know, you can talk all day long, but until people actually do something, you haven't accomplished much. And I think you can honestly say that you've got it beyond the talking into accomplishing, and for that I congratulate you. And I'm going to embarrass you even further, because that's what I do in this show. We know Lindsay. Lindsay is tenacious, if not anything. When she sets her mind to doing something, look out and don't get in her way. That's the reason that you did this in the first place, is because you thought that you could make a difference. You went into it kind of blindly, went, oh, you know, I'm going to do this. And I'm just going to see what I can accomplish in a short period of time. I don't think that you had in mind to be here 4 years later with the kind of response you've had. I don't think that was in your mind at the time when it first started. It was just something that you thought you could help. And then it went from there.
It really did. I mean, I kind of look back at this kind of with a smile, but, you know, that first April when we kind of launched Riders for Helmets and went to Rolex and had the riders wearing the T-shirts, which I don't know if I'm allowed to say on air what they said on them.
They said strap one on.
We were referring to helmets when those T-shirts were designed, I have to say.
Got a lot of attention, though.
They did, but we had, like, Lucinda Green and Gina Miles and Holly Bennett and, you know, all these amazing event riders wearing these T-shirts, and there was tons of photographs of them taken at Rolex that year wearing them, and those photographs kind of went viral, obviously for joke reasons as well, on Facebook and Twitter and gosh knows where else. And you know, that was just such great testament to those guys that they kind of said, I had this kind of went to them with this idea and said, you're going to think I'm crazy, but, and you know, nearly four years later, here we are. So just absolutely amazing. And I have to thank all of the everyday equestrians as well who send their stories in. I mean, we get stories from New Zealand and Canada and obviously the USA and Australia and as far away as Germany and the Middle East. And I think it was wonderful because we've had, you know, this year and last year we had a lady in Bahrain, and she follows the campaign and literally sent photographs of these children at this riding school in Bahrain wearing their helmets on Helmet Awareness Day, and she's so excited to be part of the campaign. And I think that's absolutely wonderful. It really is. And sometimes it's heartbreaking, you know, becoming friends with mothers who lost their children at early ages and fathers who lost their children. But sometimes you really think, wow, it's a lot of hard work, but I wouldn't change it for any money in the world. I really wouldn't, because I just feel it is making a difference, and I do believe we've saved some lives. And like I say, the emails we receive are testament to that, people that have fallen off, and if they hadn't have watched a video of Courtney or somebody else on the website or hadn't have read a story, they would not have been wearing a helmet. And doctors have told them, you know, very plainly, you would be dead had you not had that helmet on. And I do want to take this opportunity as well to say, you know, we have some naysayers that say, well, helmets don't stop you getting a head injury. And that's true, they don't, but they do save lives, and they do, in a lot of cases, lessen the severity of the head injury. So, you know, they can't...
I can guarantee you, Lindsay, that a helmet will 100% of the time cause you to have less in the head injury than if you didn't have one at on.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely, yeah.
That's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, it is, but you'd be amazed. You know, we do have those occasional emails where you'd be like, oh, well, you know, you're trying to say that helmets are the be-all and end-all, and that's not what we're trying to say. We're just trying to say that, you know, the statistics and the evidence overwhelmingly prove that helmets are the smart choice. So, and I think even in the last year, we've started to make some inroads into the Western disciplines as well, and I work with some marvelous people, you know, Kathy Slack and Kim and Megan Sparks and Mary Miller Jordan, and gosh, I'm going to forget somebody and be in so much trouble. Marsha Hart,
our very own Tammy Surratt here on the Western
Riders. Yeah,
radio
and
show.
Tammy as well. Yeah. And all of those Western riders, you know, are at the top of their tree, and they're wearing helmets, and it's amazing.
Well, now, that's something else. You know, helmets has been something we've been talking about for a long time. I'm on a new kick, and that is safety for the holidays. I want everybody that knows somebody that's a horse person, as a gift this year, to get them something that involves safety, whether, you know, helmets obviously are in that pile of optional gifts that you could get. But one of the things that we've seen, and this is my new campaign, one of the things that we've seen in doing this show every day is we read every news story that comes out about a horse. So every morning I get up at 4 o'clock and Jamie gets up early and Jennifer gets up early and we're sitting reading all the news stories to see what we want to cover that day. And as a rule, we tend not to cover the rescue stories or the repossessed horse stories from around the country because, to be honest, there's 30 of those every day and it's just totally depressing. You know, it's not that we don't believe in rescuing horses. We all have rescued horses. I do. Jamie does. We've done that. But we would just be depressing people here every day. And then the other thing that we see, and it seems like the last couple of months has just been worse for this, is we see people getting hit on the roads, here, especially here in the United States, but also over in England. Less so there, but more here, where they're riding down the road and they get hit by a car. Jennifer, when she was a kid, got hit by a car. You know, it's just been a thing that we've seen a lot of in the news here over recent months. So when you became involved with High Visibility North America, I went, oh, this is really cool because it's part of what I was looking for here as an idea for holiday gifts for this year. It's the whole idea of give safety for Christmas because you have a product line now available through High Visibility North America that hasn't been available to horse riders. And what I'm talking about is the neon-colored vests and coats and things like that. The only thing we've really been able to get up to this point is the little vest you buy for $10 at Lowe's that construction workers use.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. That's the only thing that's really been available. But when we saw this line, and I actually got to try on the jackets, and they fit, and they're functional, and they really do work, I was so excited about it. And you have stuff with High Visibility North America, anywhere from vests to little triangles to all different kinds of products that we can use for safety while riding. Two things. One, when during hunting season, which is coming up here very shortly in most states. And number two, riding on the roads. And there's a lot of people that don't ride on the roads, but there are a lot that do. We ride on the roads every day. So, you know, when I get my pony cart and I'm going out there, even though we don't have much traffic, I'll be having my vest on in the pony cart. Jennifer wears hers to ride out in the roads here. And they're all from High Visibility North America. I'm so glad that there's finally a product line that is designed for riders is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I think it's just so nice as well because the range is clearly not just functional in terms of safety, but it's very fashionable as well. I mean, I think everybody's gone gaga over the pink and the pink jackets, and I have to say I lean towards that as my favorite color in the range. But obviously the orange, like you say, for trail riding in the woods, for out on the trail, for general safety. But it's just
I kind of lean towards the orange and away from the pink. Personally, just saying. Jennifer looks good in the pink.
I thought you would look mighty good in the pink there.
Oh, yeah, that is
No, but it's just, it is, you have to kind of see the range to appreciate it. But it's very fashionable. We've made it fashionable and fun, not just something that's from a safety aspect. And it's very well designed as well. It's designed for equestrians, but it's designed for riding in. In terms of all those little details that make the difference. So I have to say it's been quite interesting as well because the event riders, we had several of the event riders that were actually competing at Rolex in April wearing the jackets, And then Kim, who's going to be a guest on the show, she actually wore one of the jackets at Dressage at Devon as well. And everybody was asking her, where did you get that jacket from? So it's really kind of a fashionable thing as well. So I think it's been really nice to see it go into the other disciplines outside of trail riding and, you know, that kind of thing. And we even had Dan James, who was obviously talk about a Western rider, who was the 2012 Road to the Horse champion. He wore one of the orange jackets for his clinic or demonstration at Equine Affair this year as well. And he loves it. And he was walking around all of Equine Affair and you could spot him like a mile away. It was quite funny. And then he had his guys come by the booth and we gave them jackets as well. So they were all like walking around in neon. So it's really cool. And people just love it though, because it's like really fun and fashionable.
Well, now if you get the neon cowboy hat to match his jacket, you'll have him totally outfitted.
I know. I'm not sure if we'll make that happen because, you know, I think he's quite attached to his cowboy hat from what I hear. But worth a try. You never know. Maybe next year we'll start a new trend in neon cowboy hats.
Well, you can find all of these products that are definitely going to be on my recommended for the holidays list at highvisibility.us.com. And you have a website there where you can order these products, and I know you're going to have a new website out here very shortly. But you can also find them on Facebook. What's that address?
It's facebook.com Equisafety, EQUISAFETY. And you have to go to there is two Equisafety pages, and you have to make sure you're on the North American one, not the UK one. And obviously you'll see the relevant posts on the appropriate page, yeah.
So it's highvisibility.us.com. Take a look. They have everything. They have some inexpensive stuff that you can find over there, from the simple lightweight vest that you can wear all year round to some very, very nice stylish jackets. The sayings on the back are a lot of fun. And I think that, you know, if you ride at all, two things I'll repeat. If you ride at all around hunters or during hunting season, you need these jackets and vests, and I'd wear them all the time during hunting season, whether you're on the horse or not, if you're at the farm. And number two is if you ride on roads. If you ride or step onto a road, then you need to be wearing one of these vests at all times. It should be there with your helmet, just the two things that you put on. All right, very good. Well, let's talk a little bit of dressage, which is not something, you know, that we normally relate to wearing bright, loud clothing, but let's find out about that. You can introduce Kim.
Yes, very, very pleased to say a good friend of mine, but also an SEI dressage rider, Kim Gentry, who originally hails from Australia, but now I believe, and she will correct me if I'm wrong, is an American citizen, but she's still got that accent. I can hear it in that. So, yes, good morning, Kim.
Good morning, Lindsay. And my vote for Glenn's jacket is definitely pink.
Oh, thanks, Kim. I appreciate that.
I think you'd look stunning in it.
That'd be great. Hey, Kim, you do. We got England, we got Australia, and the United States represented right here, right now.
We got all the bases covered.
Yep, that's right. And I do still hear the accent, too, Kim. It's not totally gone.
It's still there a little bit, yep.
So obviously I've known you for quite a number of years now, Kim, but if you wouldn't mind for a moment, just if you could introduce yourself and just tell us a little bit about your background and also what you're doing now at the moment for our audience, that would be great.
Sure. Well, as you mentioned, I'm an FEI rider. I ride up through Grand Prix and train up through Grand Prix and bring young horses along and work with a variety of amateur clients. And my background, though, coming from Australia, was a little bit of everything, and grew up primarily eventing in Australia. And when I was a teenager, my family moved to Singapore, so I worked with a lot of off-the-track thoroughbreds in Singapore and brought them along into eventing and brought some of them up into the international eventing ranks. So my background is a little bit unique for a dressage trainer, I think. And also when I lived in Singapore, I had the opportunity to race. I had an amateur jockey license, so I rode in several races, which was pretty exciting, to say the least. But anyway, I think, you know, it's given me a really broad background and experience with horses, and a lot of different things that I can draw on, even training dressage horses, you know, in a classical way. So a little bit different background, but, you know, I enjoy it. And every once in a while, I like to get out the jumps, although they're a lot smaller than they used to be. pretty chicken about jumping now.
that's
pretty much my background. Yeah.
And you recently competed at dressage at Devon as well, didn't you?
I did with my young horse, Leonardo, in the six-year-old class, and he did extremely well. And last year, he, in fact, won the five-year-old class there. And I've campaigned him the last 3 years in the USEF Markel Young Horse Championships. So he went as a 4-, 5-, and 6-year-old. And this year, there was only two horses that made it all the way through to six-year-old. So I'm pretty proud of him. And I have a Grand Prix horse that I've had for 4 years and brought him up to Grand Prix from a Pre-St. George horse. So I've got two of my own that keep me pretty busy and a barn full of client horses and a lot of enthusiastic amateur riders who really enjoy their horses. And I think, more importantly, they really enjoy the learning process, which
that's
in this sport,
great.
I think, you know, you've got to enjoy that because the showing is only a small piece of it.
You do, absolutely. And I think you make it fun as well. But I know you've told me many times your stories about, you know, your take on safety and the importance of, you know, safety protection gear when riding. But I think you just have some very unique and varied stories to share, and that's why I wanted you to come on the show today, Kim. And if you wouldn't mind, I know we had this discussion again last night, but if you wouldn't mind sharing the story, I think when you were in Sydney and as a child, you had an accident, and if you could tell us a little bit more about that.
I did, and I think I was probably about 7 years old, and I'd started riding a couple of years beforehand and just basically got launched off of a horse in just kind of a freak accident. And I had one of the lovely velvet hunt caps with the chin strap, the elastic chin strap that everybody had at the time and thought was the standard for safety, and landed straight on my head. And, you know, back in those days, nobody really, I think, was that concerned about head injuries. And you know, I continued around the barn for the rest of the day and, you know, a couple of hours later was sick and had a headache and nauseous and vomiting and all of that, which is classic for concussion. But, you know, nobody ever did anything. You know, I was just at home and, you know, I guess I was lucky that I didn't have anything more severe. But I've had situations like that a couple of times in my younger years. And it's good to see now that people take those things more seriously. You know, when you do come off, don't get back on the horse until you've been evaluated.
I mean, that's really important
advice.
Absolutely. I mean, that's actually quite scary that you had all the classic symptoms for a concussion and it was basically ignored. I mean, you are incredibly lucky that, you know, you weren't more severely injured.
Two, I think things were a little bit different back there. Our parents were like, you know, you crack your head open, you don't need stitches, go out and play. They were a little less. I mean, they didn't, it's not that they didn't care. It's just like, well, you're not dying. You can get on with it.
Yeah, you're okay. I mean, the inflammation wasn't there then, I think. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and I think, you know, Lindsay and I were talking last night, you know, some of my worst accidents haven't been when I was eventing or racing or doing what you would think were classically dangerous things to be doing, but, you know, hacking a horse home after a working session on a long, you know, just having the horse on a buckle and something scared it and I got bucked off and dislocated my hip. And just situations where you don't expect an accident to happen. You know, you think it's going to happen on cross country when you're, you know, really pushing it and you're up against a big fence. But most of the time these accidents happen when you least expect it. One of the things that I really stress with my own clients is that safety has to come first and be realistic about the situations that you're putting yourself in and be realistic about your own capabilities as a rider and your capabilities of your horse at that particular time. And don't overface yourself.
And I think, didn't you have an accident about a month before Courtney King died accident as well, something that really made you think about wearing helmets?
I did. I got bucked off of one of my own horses. Basically, the horses had been off for a few days during the Christmas break, and it was really cold here in Memphis. You know, 20 degrees is pretty cold. The horses don't really have to deal with that very often. And, you know, the horse was a bit frisky and just started broncoing. And I came off and didn't have a helmet on because back then, you know, that wasn't the thing that dressage riders did. And I had a pretty shaken up head and a pretty significant concussion from that and had trouble with my speech for about a week. And it really scared me. And that's when I started wearing a helmet after that fall. And I have ever since, and my students all wear helmets or I won't teach them. I mean, you're not allowed in my arena for a lesson unless you have a helmet on.
I mean, that has to be a massive liability issue from a trainer's standpoint as well. You know, if something happens to one of
absolutely.
The students.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a huge thing these days with insurance and everything else.
Absolutely. I think it's negligent not to have a student with a helmet on.
Now, Kim, let me ask you, and I know there's some rules, and we've talked about the rules in dressage here as they've changed over the years as far as wearing helmets is concerned, but what's the feeling? I mean, you were just at Dressage at Devon. Are dressage riders more embracing it than they did 5 years ago? Is this something that
absolutely.
They're doing because they have to, or they're doing because they're embracing it as a whole?
I think we've all embraced it. I think you always have the exceptions to it, but for me personally, it's something I don't even think about anymore. You know, I used to be worried if I wear a helmet, am I going to be judged differently in an FEI class? But now I think it's so accepted. The judges don't even score you differently if you're wearing a helmet. And I think people are starting to accept the fashion of it too. You know, you're seeing helmets that have that are way more stylish and have some really neat things with them now. And you know, you're seeing some of the shad belly styles change too. So I don't think it's an issue with the dressage community anymore.
Well, there's a lot more of them that are blingy now than there used to be. And you're right, the helmets are really being made now. They really do match the outfits, and they're classy looking.
Yeah, I think they're cool. I think some of the ones with the bling on them look awesome.
Yeah, and I think they're just going to get blingier, don't you, Lindsay? I think bling is going to be the new thing here in helmets here in the next couple of years.
I think it will be to a point, because I think there's still, I'm certain if you would agree with me on this, Kim, but I think there's still some judges that are like, okay, there's bling to a point. And then
yes. It's
a little too much. So I think in dressage, there will be a limit. Like in the Western disciplines, it doesn't matter. The more bling, the better. But I think in dressage, there is that, you kind of hit that wall of that limit. But I have a question for you, just from a personal interest. Do you honestly feel that the FEI will eventually change the rules so that in the FEI dressage, and I guess it comes down to the national governing bodies as well, ultimately, or maybe I'm wrong on that. Perhaps it's the FEI that governs the decision, but will the FEI classes, you think, eventually have to wear a helmet? Because, I mean, every other level, they're pretty much wearing a helmet now, and you know, just back a few years ago, that wasn't the case. And all of the, you know, the US started it, then Canada followed suit, and then Great Britain. So do you see that as being kind of the way it's going?
I think it's a matter of time. I don't know how quickly it'll happen, but I think eventually it's going to, because also you have, as younger riders come up through the ranks, they're used to wearing their helmets. So it may be that there's got to be a little bit of a turnover of the top riders, but I think eventually it's going to happen. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly obviously would hope so, but I didn't want to imply my bias onto that answer.
Yeah,
but I think,
I mean, you never know.
I mean, even at that level, though, you are certainly seeing more and more of the riders actually just wearing the helmet now. And I think, you know, they're so applauded for setting such a positive example. I'm sure that has an impact on, you know, perhaps more decisions to go forward and do so as well.
Right. I hope that they do it, and I hope they do it sooner than later.
Mm-hmm. And then
it might happen naturally, as you said, because more and more riders are just going to be wearing helmets anyway, because that's what they're used to. So it's a lot of them, as they're coming up, especially these kids coming up, they're not going to own a top hat because they won't have hats yet, you know, so they're
exactly.
going to go in helmets, and it's kind of going to become its own thing anyway.
Exactly.
I could see that.
And I think, you know, when people are seeing the top riders wearing helmets, I think that's really what's important, that they're setting an example.
Yeah. And just going back to something that you said a few moments ago, if I may as well, Kim, you talked about the responsibility of owners when, you know, they bring a horse to a trainer to basically be under your care, of being honest about what that horse is all about as well. And didn't you have an incident where you actually had a broken back at one time?
I did. I had a client. And let me just say this. In my experience, the majority of clients are very honest about their horses, you know, to a point where they're telling you all of the details.
It's too much.
sometimes it's a little bit too much, but you know what? I appreciate that in a client because you want to have a partnership and work together to retrain a horse if it's been a problem horse, or to develop a partnership with the owner that works better than it currently is working. But I have had situations where people have brought horses to me and haven't been honest, and I had one situation where the horse had a history of bucking and the owner didn't tell me, and it was nasty. The horse really, nasty bucked me off. And I broke my back in two places, and it took me a year and a half of physical therapy and rehabilitation to really get back to being able to ride 100%. And, you know, I still have issues with my back today because of that. But, you know, that's a situation where the owner wasn't honest with me, and it came out later that the horse had this history. And, you know, I just really would ask people, you know, there are trainers like me who are happy to help work with horses that have a bit of a history. But it's really important that we know what it is, because we may decide that, no, that's not my thing, but I know somebody else who will take that on. And, you know, just make sure that we're in a situation where we're safe too. And it was funny, I had a situation a couple of weeks ago where I had a horse come in that had some things going on, and the trainer was there with the horse, and he was telling my clients the history of the horse. And one of my clients actually came in the ring. I was on another horse at the time. And she said, we don't want you getting on that horse. And I said, well, I'm going to watch the guy ride it. And I watched the guy ride it, and the horse was fine, so I rode it. But it was really nice that my client actually came in and said, we don't want you getting on that horse and getting hurt.
It is, and I think that's just something that people don't think about, do they? I mean, it's not – when we're talking about safety, because this is a show on safety, and this is Glenn's campaign for the holidays, you know, I have to mention that again, Glenn, because I think that's just
– Thank you.
but it's not just about the protective gear, is it, from a safety aspect? It's not about wearing the helmet, wearing the body protector, as we'll hear from Colleen in a moment. You know, it's about all aspects of safety, and it's about that thought process of people being honest as well. So I think that's kind of why I wanted you to elaborate on that a little bit, because it's not just about the protective gear. It's about just sharing information that's very pertinent to trainers and to keep people safe as well.
Exactly. And the other thing, too, that I see is I sometimes wish that people would be more honest with themselves about their own riding skill level and also about their horses. You know,
yeah,
and I see people go off. I know, but I see people go off to events and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, you know, this is a disaster waiting to happen. You know, and as a trainer, you know, you can only give your best advice and your recommendation, and people either take it or they don't. And I've had, you know, some people not take too kindly to some things that I've said, you know, about, well, and not mean things, but, you know, saying I don't think that this is something that you should be doing right now. And it's not fair to the horse. You know, you're going to hurt your horse or you're going to hurt yourself. But it seems like most of the time those are the people that don't get hurt.
Over the years, we've learned there's two kinds of riders. There's those that think that that they ride a level above where they are all the time.
Right.
And then there's those that think that, you know, they're riding a level below where they should be.
Right.
So you have those two kinds of mentalities, and thank God with eventing, you mentioned eventing, thank God they put in the rule about out-of-control riders for cross-country day, because we just would see that every event we'd go to, the ones that were way over their heads and totally out of control. And you're going, you know, this is just, first of all, it's dangerous for them, their horse, and everybody else that's on the course that day. So thank God they did put in those rules. I think it's settled that down a little bit. But, boy, it was, you know, you see it in dressage. It's not so much dangerous in dressage as it is just silly, you know, to advance that level when you're not ready. And then you have the others who you're going, okay, you know, you've won 85 blue ribbons at this level. It's really time to move on now, you know.
Exactly.
So you do have both ends of the spectrum there, you know.
Exactly. And it's got to be fair to the horse. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you've got to be a steward for your horse. You know, are you going way beyond your capabilities, and what's the poor horse thinking and doing, you know?
Right.
And that's something that, you know, it's like, well, the person wants to ride for St. George because they want to wear a sad belly, which is great, but your horse isn't ready for it. You know, take a little bit more time. Take another year or two. Bring your horse along. Then the horse is happy, and that's what we want.
Right. And, by the way, when you fall off with a shad belly, it hurts the same. As well.
It does. It costs more.
Exactly. It hurts more, your pocketbook.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, Lindsay, thank you for inviting Kim to join us today. Kim, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it. It was nice to meet you.
You're welcome.
And we're definitely going to have you
Likewise.
Back. We have to have you back on the Dressage Radio Show here one of these days, too.
That sounds great. I look forward to it. And thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And thank you for being such a great ambassador for safety, Kim, because I know you really have supported riders for helmets so, so much. And I sincerely appreciate that as well.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a great cause, Lindsay.
And it's Kim Gentry, G-E-N-T-R-Y, dressage.com. So Kim Gentry, dressage.com, if you want to check out her website. There's all kinds of pretty pictures on the homepage of you riding very nice, what don't look like Asian horses at all, so you've come a long way. Very nice horses in a helmet. Every picture on the homepage, you're wearing a helmet. Good job.
Great. Good. Well, I appreciate it. Okay. You all have a good day.
You too, Kim.
She used to race horses in Asia. How cool is that?
I know. She has quite the varied background. She really does.
You know, Tammy's the same way, from Australia, did some wild things, you know, and with horses and stuff, and had all these adventures. It seems like the Australian girls, when they're coming up, end up with all these cool adventures. And then, you know, look at Tammy. She's out there, world champion mounted shooter, and we got Kim here, FEI dressage rider. I mean, it's so cool to hear. And the Australians are so much fun, too. I'm sorry,
They do. I was tempted to say, g'day, mate, but, you know, I thought about it.
Well, let's take a break. We're for our song of the day, and I have two here. I can't decide which one to play, so I'll let you decide. We have Marianne Kennedy's Green on Green, which is definitely about riding horses you shouldn't be. And it's the song Green on Green Makes Black and Blue. And then I also have Templeton Thompson's Guardian Angel, which is a much more mellow song.
Oh, we have to go for Guardian Angel by my Shake Your Booty Cowgirl friend, Templeton Thompson. Hands down, we've got to go for that one.
Could pass for a cowboy, the way she carried herself, and that 50 pounds of leather, put it up on that pony, light as a feather, like she'd done it all her life. And she asked if I was ready, handing me the reins, and we started out walking. Up until that morning, she hadn't been much on talking. Guess it finally come the time, and she said, I've learned more from the back of a horse than most folks ever get to know. You never really know what you're made of till you ride out on your own. Ooh, baby, don't worry, I know you're gonna be just fine. And ooh, now don't be in a hurry, you feel it when you hit your stride. So don't get rattled, sit deep in the sand, remember to hold on tight, and never ride faster than your guardian angel. Faster than your guardian angel.
Ready?
Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I've got a beautiful feeling. Horses are coming my way. You're listening to Horses in the Morning.
Yes, that's right. You are listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenda Geek, and I am here with Lindsay White of High Visibility North America. We are doing our monthly safety episode here of Horses in the Morning. She'll be with me every month, and that's a good thing because Lindsay and I have been friends for years, and it's just so much fun to hang out with her. And so thank you, Lindsay, for doing this. I really appreciate it.
No, I appreciate you suggesting this idea to me, Glenn. And I have to say, I love the jingles on this show. I mean, you have, like, the best jingles. But I'm just waiting for, like, the horn. I want a horn before the end of the show, if you can make that happen.
Well, I don't have a horn. I do have – I have a whip. Does that count? The whip?
Let's hear it. Oh!
I have a whip. I have a little bit of green on green. Here's
green on green makes black and blue. Wouldn't ride that horse if I were you. It's like walking on a high tight wire. Dynamite too close too far. Today you
So that's a green on green. So that's what that one was. Do you know where that bumper I just played, the singing there for the horses in the morning, do you know where that was done?
No, I don't.
That was done at the World Equestrian Games in 2010 in the All-Tech tent on a quiet day during the 16 days of the World Equestrian Games, and that was Everett. Everett was the gentleman who did the music. He's a conductor, and he did the music for the opening ceremonies and the closing ceremonies. He happened
wow.
to be in the tent. We were having a drink together, actually, in the afternoon one day in the All-Tech tent, hidden away back in a corner, and all it was Everett, me, and some All-Tech employees. And we just were sitting there, and I said, I got this new show coming out. We haven't started Horses in the Morning yet. I said, I wonder if you could just, if we could just put together an opener for it. And he said, well, let's just do it right now. And he sat there on the back of a piece of paper, and all the, it turned out that the All-Tech employees all were singers. So they sat down and they wrote out the lyrics and they sang it right there. I recorded it on my phone, and that's where that bumper came from the World of Question Games.
That is a great story, Glenn. And all I can say is thank heavens you didn't ask me to record the opening song, because I sound like a strangled cat when I sing.
Yeah, they don't let me sing either. That doesn't happen either. I don't.
Yeah, they don't let me sing. So it's not a good thing when I sing.
Well, let me just do a couple of housekeeping things here. One, I wanted to mention that tomorrow morning we will be doing the EquityMFG.com Wheel of Trivia. So if you have never called in to play the Wheel of Trivia, give us a call tomorrow morning. New callers get put to the front of the line, and you just answer one trivia question that's all about equine stuff. So it's a equestrian trivia question of some kind. And then if you get it correct, I spin the wheel that's here on my desk. There's 14 slots full of fantastic prizes worth over $500. And we have some new stuff that's on the wheel again this week, some new companies joining up. So, you know, we've given away $250 to $300 on a Wednesday morning in prizes. It just depends on how smart people are that day. So definitely give us a call. Jamie will be here tomorrow. And then Thursday we have, for the first time, just like Lindsay this week, we have Karen McMurtry, who I've got to learn to say her name, who is an Arab breeder out of Sarasota, Florida, not too far from Wendy, actually a mile down the road from Wendy. And she is going to be with us once a month as we take a look at the Arab breed every month. She did a test run last month, and it was well received. So we're going to do that every month as well. So we have a lot of new things coming up here on the Horses in the Morning show.
I'm going to give that a yee-haw.
That didn't really go with the
Arabian thing, but I just had to do that. Sorry.
Yeah, we were trying to figure out what to do for, you know, how we always do the opening music, depending on what the show's going to be. And I said, what are we going to do for the Arab show? It's going to have to be like Arabian music. You know, it's going to have to be something like that. We're going to have to do something with horses winning and bucking. I said, that'd be perfect for the Arab show. But I don't know if they'll get the humor in that. So we might have to think about that a little bit before I get in trouble.
You'll work it out, I'm sure.
I'll work it out. Why don't you introduce our next guest?
So I'm very excited, following on from Kim this morning, that we have international event rider Colleen Rutledge joining us. And Colleen has been a very successful event rider, and she recently had a rotational fall while riding cross country. And she's going to tell us a little bit about that this morning, and also about why safety protection gear is so important.
Good morning, Colleen.
Good morning.
Well, we have a little bit of an echo with you, but I think it maybe it'll get better here.
Fingers crossed.
Go ahead, Lindsay.
So, Colleen, thank you so much for coming on the show this morning, and I know you're currently recuperating, but firstly, so our audience is a little bit more aware of who you are and what you're about, can you tell us a bit about yourself?
Sure. I am a four-star rider who is currently the only I have the only horse that has completed all five four-stars as a team with me, my horse Shiraz. So I've done all of the four-stars in this hemisphere. And then I've got some young stock that's on its way up that's proving to be quite exciting. So
that's excellent. And then I have to say as well, well done, because that is quite an amazing feat. I don't think anybody realizes that, you know, to go to five four-star events on the same horse. I mean, congratulations to you on that, Colleen, because that is a huge, huge achievement. And I know it's been incredibly disappointing to you with your recent accident, because you were having such an amazing season, so it put you out of a couple of the last competitions for the year, I'm sure. But to our benefit, because we get to have you as a guest on the show today, so could you possibly fill us in and tell us a bit about your accident?
Sure. I was riding a fairly experienced prelim horse who, you know, I mean, she's been competing at prelim pretty much the majority of this year and was going quite well. We came out of the box, and she was quite aggressive to the fences, so I kept asking her to settle and, you know, calm down, and I figured that some point around the course that she would, and, you know, she made a fairly impressive mistake and left a leg down and wasn't able to get herself back around to get our landing gear down, so we ended up pretty much on the ground. So it was, you know, we violated the first rule of riding, keep the horse between you and the ground. Unfortunately, I was the piece between her and the ground, and in the process dislocated my hip. So.
And you were wearing, obviously, riding cross-country, a helmet and body protector, but to what extent do you feel that saved you from more serious injury?
Well, having my – I had a body protector, and I had an air vest, and I had a helmet, and – you know, the way the fall went, she ended up rolling completely over me. And if I hadn't had that safety equipment on, you know, my injuries would have been a lot worse. As it was, really and truly, my only injury besides a couple of jammed toes on my right foot was my hip. And that was, my hip ended up being broken because of the dislocation, not because of anything else. It wasn't a crushing fracture. It wasn't anything along those lines. It was literally just the dislocation of my hip is what broke my the back of my pelvis.
And you were in the hospital for some time, and you obviously had surgery. So can you tell us a little bit about your hospital stay and you know, any remarks possibly from the doctors on the significance of the safety gear that you were wearing as well?
Well, the doctors were all shocked that I wore this thing called an airbag. Like that they were all terming an airbag because they had never seen it. I actually ended up showing them pictures of what it looked like when I was riding, and you know, they were convinced that I had to have some upper body trauma or something along those lines, because there's no possible way that I came through relatively unscathed. And, you know, I kept going back through, and I'm like, no, I mean, fine, let's go for another CAT scan. Let's go look at this. They were looking for any, you know, any injuries, and I was completely fine. Literally the only problem with me was my hip. And, you know, it was a true testament to the safety gear that I had. Didn't have a concussion, definitely. And we know she rolled over my head because the brim, I had a hard brim on my helmet, and it was actually bent.
Wow.
So, you know, I mean, we know that she definitely came over top of me, besides the fact that I was covered in dirt and had grass and dirt in places I really wish I hadn't. So, you know, it was definitely a very, very dangerous fall, and it could have been so much worse. And I'm actually quite thankful that, you know, I'm only a little bit broken.
And obviously you're a mother as well. So, I mean, that has to be pretty scary from your perspective, like having a child and then being in that situation where perhaps it hasn't hit you yet and maybe this is something to come. But when you kind of stop for a moment and realize this could have been so much worse.
Well, it is. But, I mean, that's always, you know, my whole philosophy behind everything is essentially that, I take on these risks every single day. If I'm really meant to go, nothing that I can do, you know, I'll get hit by a bus walking across the street. You know, at least I'm doing what I love, and my kids know that I'm doing what I love, and I try very hard to make sure that I don't do an unnecessary risk. You know, I mean, this was a relatively experienced horse who just made a really bad mistake, and she hadn't made mistakes like this up until this point. So, you know, I mean, it's, I don't mind the mistakes as long as they learn from it. And once she showed me that she wasn't going to learn from it, that, you know, she doesn't need to be in my barn anymore. And so she's since been retired to unrecognized levels. But it's really and truly like my horses get taught from a very early age, care of themselves and take care of me. And, you know, I mean, it's always dangerous, and we know this as eventers. I mean, that's kind of why we do this, but it's definitely, it's not something that I could stop doing. I didn't actually start competing at the upper levels until after I had kids.
You know, we were talking about it yesterday on the show, how it's I did read that this particular jump you were going over wasn't one that anybody would have really considered a super tough jump or combination, and those are the ones that usually end up catching you. And we were at a driving competition over the weekend, and it was the same thing. The obstacles that were the quote-unquote simple ones were the ones that caught people because they just hadn't spent a whole lot of time on it. And it's that way in eventing too. You find that a lot. It's the simple jump out in the middle of nowhere that catches you.
Exactly, and I think part of it was, you know, she recognized that it wasn't a terribly difficult fence, so she came down to it. She didn't give it the respect that she needed, and she kind of flung herself across it, and in the process, you know, didn't respect it at all and ended up getting us both in trouble. But, I mean, it's normally the big impressive fences are the ones that jump the best because the horses recognize them so much better as, you know, a worthy effort. And it wasn't. I mean, it was a simple table coming down a little bit of a slope. It shouldn't have been a problem.
And I think that's so important, something you said in your previous answer as well, Colleen, that it's not just about you as the rider, it's about the horse and teaching the horse respect for the fences as well. And that makes you the person that you are and as good as you are and the rider that you are, is that is part of the whole mentality, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, I don't want a horse who insists on being perfect every single time. I want a horse who is willing to make a mistake, learn from it, and not make that mistake again. Because a horse that insists on being perfect every single time, when they do make a mistake, it's catastrophic. And, you know, a horse that's made some minor mistakes here and there and has learned how to really adjust themselves and really think on their own feet, they develop that, you know, the infamous fifth leg that we all look for, or sometimes sixth or seventh leg, you know, depending on how big of a problem we get into. But it's you've got to have a really, really actively thinking horse to do this game rather than just a machine that goes out and runs and jumps.
Now, I do know that eventers are not so good, because I'm married to one who's been broken a few bones along the way. They're not so good at sitting still and having to take a little bit of time off. Are you driving the whole family nuts?
Luckily, both of my kids are in school, and my husband is being phenomenal by coming home and taking care of me. But, yes, I have been contemplating homicide by being locked in my house I have gotten a little bit of reprieve. I was lucky enough to be able to go to Fair Hill and spectate, even though that killed me a little bit inside too. But it was, it's, yeah, I don't do well with sitting. And I've been threatened by everybody in my life, doctors included, that if I don't sit, they're going to put me back in a into a coma so that I have to behave.
I have to say, Colleen, I had a little chuckle last night because I read something. I think it was on your event, your page on Facebook, and Brian, I believe, is your husband, and it said something like he'd been going home every day, like you say, to make your lunch and kind of look after you and see you were okay. And he got home, and there you were, sat with a drink and your sandwich or whatever it was you had for lunch, and he's kind of like, "Is everything good?" And you're like, "Yep." You know, I mean, who can argue with that? I mean, that's naughty a little bit, but also testament to the eventer mentality that, you know what, you're going to be up there a lot sooner than those doctors tell you.
Well, and yeah, I mean, I tried to warn the doctors when we were originally in the hospital of, you know, whatever you think is going to happen, be prepared that I'm going to push the envelope. And, you know, I mean, essentially, the doctor said, "No, I'm going to tell you right now for everybody, this is what it is." And I just looked at him and said, "Okay, you've not met me yet, but sure, you can hold on to that dream." you know, I mean, it's about pushing boundaries for us, but I also do understand that I have to heal completely first because I'm going to set myself back if I don't. So it's walking that very fine line of pushing my boundary yet not pushing it too far to do any actual damage. So yeah, it's tough.
When does that happen? When will you start in physical therapy and hopefully get back in the saddle? What's your time frame? I won't ask the doctors.
My time frame. Well, as far as I was concerned, I tried telling the doctor when he said that I was going to be non-weight bearing, you know, for 12 weeks. I'm like, excellent. That means I can sit in a saddle. That's non-weight bearing. She didn't find me at all funny.
Love it.
But, you know, I've already started physical therapy. They started me on physical therapy the day after surgery, getting us up, and, you know, getting me up and getting me moving. I've already started doing, you know, I have a little bit of experience because I had an ACL repair a few years ago. So I already know about getting the flexibility back and starting to get the range of motion back. So I had already started working on that a little bit. But for the most part, I go through the doctor on Thursday, and I should hopefully be able to pin him down there about what I should be allowed to do. You know, my goal is to be able to get into a swimming pool as soon as possible so that I can start getting some strength back in the leg without being weight-bearing and get my fitness back up so that when they do tell me I can get back on a horse, I'm not feeling like a bowl of Jell-O.
And from your perspective as well, Colleen, going back to the safety aspect for one moment, if I may, I mean, obviously you're incredibly successful international event rider, but what message would you send out to just an everyday rider, not necessarily that's riding cross country, because obviously the safety gear kind of goes along with that, but what would you say as why, whether it's a helmet or body protector or air vest, whatever, is just so important to consider all aspects of safety?
Well, the helmet, I mean, the helmet's just a no-brainer. Honestly, you know, you like having your head round. You like being able to think clear, coherent thoughts. And, you know, generally, you kind of have to have a helmet if you're going to fall off and do something stupid along those lines. I mean, that's just, you don't get into a car and not put your seatbelt on for the most part. And, you know, I mean, I ride with a helmet every day no matter what. Heck, sometimes I even drive with one when I forget that it's on. But, you know, I mean, that's we have got so much technology now that is out there to help us that, you know, we need to take advantage of it. We would all laugh at a football player who walked onto the field wearing 1920s gear because the technology has improved so much. And it's just as dangerous of a game as we play. So for those people that, you know, hold on to tradition and, oh, but this is the way that it's always been, this is how it should always be, you know, my statement to that is, no, we're smarter than that now. You know, we've got these molecular foams that help prevent injuries and, you know, bags that cushion us and don't necessarily stop the injuries, but lessen them. And when things are fitted correctly, you know, it helps. It helps tremendously. So, I mean, it's just one of those. It's just stupid not to.
And you are right, and that's why I just wanted you to be a guest on the show this morning, Colleen, because, I mean, you really do say it how it is. And just absolutely thank you so much for coming on and sharing a little bit of that insight this morning with us. And if you could please share your website with everybody so they can keep updated on your progress and also your Facebook page, that would be great.
Sure. It's ColleenRutledgeEventing.com is my website, and then Colleen Rutledge Eventing on Facebook, and please forgive my husband for his lack of punctuation. he's normally the one doing most of the writing on it because I'm normally the one screaming at everybody teaching. So, but he does an amazing job keeping everybody informed, and I really appreciate it because that means I don't have to.
Well, we wish you a very speedy recovery, Colleen, and thank you so much again for being a guest on the show this morning, and we will definitely be following along on Facebook and the website for Brian's update.
Excellent. I appreciate you guys having me.
All right, good luck.
Thank you.
Back in the saddle.
Hopefully.
Well, you know, one of the things that came out today that I wanted to talk a little bit about is how many accidents and injuries do happen when you are on the ground. A lot more people actually get hurt dealing with horses on the ground. I know a lot of Jennifer's injuries have happened on the ground over the years, and you know, that's the time when we tend to be a little less cautious, and then it's the stupid things that catch us off guard. So,
it is, and you know, and in talking about statistics for head injuries as well, I mean, I think it's quite amazing that about 20% of accidents that create head injuries around horses are indeed caused when the rider is on the ground. So, you know, whether it's you turning out a horse or the farrier's there or the veterinarian, whatever, you know, and that horse just suddenly decides to kick out, or, you know, something happens and spooks the horse, a lot of those accidents are just, you know, in situations where you wouldn't necessarily think about them.
Right, exactly. Well, now, we are a safety show here today, and I thought it would be kind of cool. I love lists, and I do lists here all the time on the show, much to Jennifer and Jamie's chagrin, I think. We came up with a list that actually you did, and this sort of goes along with my Safety for the Holidays campaign, about trail safety, because that, you know, when we hear about people getting hit by cars and things like that, is when they're out riding either in the trail or in the roads, or, you know, so at some point they have to get to the trail via a road, and that's when all of these things happen. But so let's talk about trail safety, and especially during hunting season coming up.
Yeah, I think there's many different things to think about when you're riding out on the trail. Most obvious one, when it's hunting season, is you have to be seen and be visible in the woods. You know, you don't want those hunters thinking that you're a deer and taking a pot shot at you. So wear orange. That is the color of choice. You can also wear yellow or pink, but orange is obviously the preferred choice during hunting season because that's the color that stands out, that hunters recognize this is not a deer and this is actually somebody riding a horse. And just not from the rider's perspective as well, but make sure your horse is visible too, because obviously a horse head could be mistaken for a deer when in the woods. So very, very important to be bright and be seen.
We come from the deer hunting capital of America in Pennsylvania, and you don't wear just the headband on your helmet or just the noseband on your horse. You wear the whole jacket. You get the quarter sheet. You get the leg wrap. Quantity, size does matter in this case. You need yards of orange.
You know, actually, the Jennifer, you know, made a point too and put it in the show notes here that bicyclists have had better nighttime and daytime equipment than we do. They have the blinking LED lights. And now they're starting to make blinking LED lights you can put in your horse's bridle. So that would be my question: is what does high visibility have for the horse? So I got my jacket on. Is it a quarter sheet for the horse when you're out trail riding? What should you have on the horse?
Yeah, I mean, quarter sheet, leg boots, nose band. you know, pretty much the whole shebang. I mean, like Jennifer says, you absolutely want your horse kitted out as bright as possible so it stands out and being seen. It's not just about the rider. It's got to be about the horse and the horse's visibility as well.
Right. Okay. And the next thing on the list.
The next thing on the list, make noise. And we're not talking about my singing as an intro because we've already decided that would be not a good idea. But, you know, put something on your horse so it actually makes noise. So whether that's on your horse's breastplate, breast collar, or on your stirrups, you know, or even you want to sing or talk while you're riding. If maybe singing's not your forte and you sound like a strangled cat, at least talk out loud, whether it's to your horse or you're on your own or a riding companion. You know, just make sure that hunters are aware that you're there, because if you're making noise, they're not going to hopefully mistake you for a deer or anything else they're trying to shoot. And carry a whistle as well. If you have an emergency situation where you're unexpectedly dismount, let's say, fall off your horse, have a whistle for emergency situations. If your horse takes off and is not to be seen again, it'll at least let people try and find you.
Let me throw in here too. We've had this discussion before in the show, and we have a lot of trail riders that listen to the show. Do not attach your cell phone to the saddle. I know a lot of you do because it's a pain to have it put on, you know, attached to your body someplace. If you attach it to the saddle, you come dismounted and your horse leaves, it's really not going to do you any good. Just saying.
Yeah.
Your horse will not call 911. I don't care how many treats you give him or how trained he is. He is not going to dial the phone for you.
He's not. That's a very good point, because that's been brought up time and again on the Riders for Helmets as well, you know, where people have been out trail riding, whether it's in the woods during hunting season or generally out on the trail, and, you know, the horse has taken off and they've had no way to communicate with anybody. And very important as well, silly as it sounds, make sure somebody knows where you're going. You know, if you're unfortunate enough that you have to go out alone, let somebody know what your plan route is, route, sorry. And, you know, leave a note, tell a friend, text a friend, and the expected time that you'll be back. And then at least if you're not, that will raise alarm bells and somebody will start to look for you.
And when you do ride in remote areas, put some identification on your horse. We had a tragic example of this down here in Florida last year.
Yeah.
A lady was not riding alone. She did all the things right. She wasn't riding alone, but she came off the horse. She was just fine, and the horse trotted away. Well, it just so happened the horse trotted away and disappeared into the woodwork, and to this day, almost a year later, has still not been found, but the horse did not have any identification on him. Put a neck collar on him. Put a name tag on his bridle with your phone number on it so that people who are just a little bit less than honest, one little thing, a tag with your phone number and name on it, might get them to call instead of going, oh, look what I found, and putting him in their backyard.
Wow. And another thing as well, I mean, pick your route. I say route, it's route. I'm so sorry. Can't help it. Pick your route through the woods as well. You know, if you stay out in the fields, you're going to be more visible, more likely to be seen. You know, it's about not going in the areas where, I mean, it is unavoidable to some extent, but don't go in the areas that are going to be the most dangerous.
I was
going to
say, if you're in Pennsylvania in hunting season, the Monday after Thanksgiving, do not go out at all. That's just the rule we had. We didn't do anything for 3 days, although we did put neon stuff on the horses. The first day of hunting season, we never even put them out. We left them in the barn. We wouldn't put them out in the fields because we had hunters all around our farm. I mean, 360 degrees around the farm. It sounded like World War III on the first day of hunting season, so we just wouldn't do it.
And think about your other best four-legged friend as well. It's not just about the horse, it's about your dog. You know, taking your dog out in the woods during hunting season, probably not such a great idea. If you have to do it and you don't have anywhere else to walk the dog, have the dog wear a high-visibility vest. And that's something that we do have as well, a vest in orange again for the dog. Keep your dog safe. You don't want your dog being shot at either.
Yeah, we need to get one for Glory because one of these days she's just going to disappear. She's been getting loose out of our backyard, and Glory's just about the right size for could be mistaken for other critters. So we definitely need to do that for when we're taking Glory out. And she would look so cute
in neon.
We're going to have to see that.
You look cute.
And then avoid peak hunting times. I think we just talked about that, you know, early morning and late in the day. But really any time during the day, during hunting season is a good time to be safe. And, you know, during, you know, not only during hunting season, but if you're riding in a forest somewhere, wearing neon is a good idea anyway, because if you get lost, number one, if you become dismounted and your horse takes off without you and you're injured, it just is so much easier for a helicopter in that case, if you're in the middle of a big forest or a state park or a federal park, to find you in the neon. It's just easier. And now that there's fashionable, stylish stuff to wear, you don't have to worry about it. I mean, you don't have to worry about, you know, not having something comfortable to wear.
Exactly. And I think, you know, we have to also remember that hunters legally have the rights to be in the woods. Equestrians and horses and riders have the rights to be in the woods. So it's about keeping communication open as well. You know, don't be ignorant of each other and make sure you communicate. And, you know, most hunters, for the most part, are going to be very respectful of equestrians and riders, but it's just about communicating with them. If you come across a group of hunters, let them know where your plan route is. Let them know where you're going. You know, so just keep that dialogue open and be respectful of each other, because that really helps in situations and reduces your risk of being shot at as well, which nobody really enjoys, and just lessens the overall risk. So I think it's just about courtesy from both sides.
Yep, that is true. And now, by the time you get to the hunter, you'll just scared away everything that he would have wanted to shoot at anyway. And he's probably going to be so pissed at you, he's going to take a couple shots on your way out. But
he,
I mean, that's
he probably will.
Yeah.
Well, that's when you have that conversation and then turn around and gallop away very quickly.
Yes, I always felt bad when we'd go canoeing or we'd go inner tubing, and then, you know, you'd go right by the guy who's fishing, and you went, well, you know, you're good for another 5 minutes there, buddy, because we just scared them all off. Well, this has been fun. Thank you so much for booking the guests and for getting everything arranged for today. We appreciate that, Lindsay. And of course, you can find Lindsay's couple of websites. You can find one at highvisibility.us.com. We want you to go there today. Think about safety for the holidays. Get somebody, every horse person you know, get something that involves safety for the holidays. And then also riders, the number 4helmets.com. Did I get them right?
You did.
Okay, good. And, of course, you can find all of our show notes at horsesinthemorning.com. And you can follow us on Facebook. Just search for Horses in the Morning. Jennifer's been doing posts here all the morning during the show. And don't forget our application. You can download it. Just go either iOS or Android to go to the App Store and search for Horse Radio Network. It's the simplest, easiest way to listen to all of our shows. Now, the only thing you can't do is this. What's that?
No, carry on, Glenn, and then I'm going to chip in for a moment, if I may.
Yep, and all I was going to say is the only thing you can't listen to is the live show for Horses in the Morning, but you can listen to it as soon as the recorded version goes up. Go ahead.
And I was going to say, sorry, because I rudely interrupted there, I think for next month's show, we might have a little treat for our audience, because I think me and you are really, and Jennifer too, are really going to have to come up with a safety jingle.
I'm not singing
now,
it. They don't let me sing.
Now, I might play the instrument rather than sing, but I do think we have to have a safety jingle for next month's show.
Let me tell you, Jamie's the only one on this show that's brave enough to sing on the air, and we prefer she didn't. So that tells you something, okay? Maybe we'll get Templeton on. Maybe we can get Templeton to do us a jingle. See,
yes.
Templeton could do it. Yeah,
so we'll come up with the words. We can do the hitting the cymbal and playing the drums, and Templeton can do the singing. Perfect.
Yeah, that'd be great. Or Sam, either one, but not us. We want people to listen past the opening 2 minutes of the show. That's the idea. Well, thank you, Lindsay. Appreciate you being on. We'll be back here tomorrow. Don't forget to join us for the Wheel of Trivia. We'll be playing it tomorrow morning show here live on Horses in the Morning. Say goodbye, Lindsay.
Bye, everyone.